भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
We're reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila chapter 23 Life's Ultimate Goal. These are the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami. A little review of our class last week. We were especially speaking on 9 symptoms of real steady bhava. And before that we discussed the progressive stage of devotional service from Shraddha to Sarusanga to Bhajana Kriya to Anartha Nivritti to Nishta to Ashakti, Ruchi, and Bhava. So, as for the 9 symptoms of Bhava, these were described as real steady as opposed to bodily symptoms that might be imitated by a pretender. In a devotee who had actually reached this stage of ecstatic emotion of in a development of Krishna consciousness, these symptoms would appear. So I then turned to the Nectar of Devotion to read them. I didn't read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita how they occurred, so we will read now in Chaitanya Charitamrita some of the same symptoms, and there'll be some repetition. There were a couple of questions that were asked last week that I thought were significant. One was how we can know what stage we're in our devotional service, since so much of this was about, especially the Adau Shradhak Tatak Sarusanga verse, was about progressive devotional service. So I thought a good answer to that was given by Lord Chaitanya himself in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In the Anchalila, in chapter 20, where he's discussing his own shikshastakam, and he then quotes Trinadapi Sunichina Taroravi Sahishnuna. Before he composed that, it sounds like he's composing these spontaneously as he speaks to Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy. One after another, these shikshastaka verses come out as he goes through different moods. He says, if one chants the holy name of Lord Krishna in this manner, he will certainly awaken his dormant love for Krishna's lotus feet. As Lord Chaitanya spoke in this way, his humility increased, and he began praying to Krishna that he could discharge pure devotional service. Wherever there is a relationship of love of Godhead, its natural symptom is that the devotee does not think of himself a devotee. Instead, he always thinks that he has not even a drop of love for Krishna. That's the verse. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, when one is actually advanced in ecstatic love of Krishna, he does not try to advertise himself. Instead, he endeavors more and more to render service to the Lord. So be interested in service rather than in trying to estimate whether I've advanced to a certain stages. Some devotees were confused whether that I sometimes seem to go forward and then I sometimes seem to go back. What stage am I in? And also the question was raised, Can we practice advanced stages, even the advanced stages of bhakti, before we have reached them? There's an interesting description of practice in the Nectar of Devotion on page 20, where Prabhupada says that it's like the practice of a child to walk. And he said, actually, it's not practice. It's something that's already dormant, a dormant capacity within the child. And by doing it, it comes out. So he seems to make a distinction between some kind of imitative activity and the natural activity of the soul, which can be taken up, it can be taken up as sadhana bhakti, but it will in time become spontaneous devotional service, because that's our nature, to love Krishna. And bhakti is just the way to evoke that natural love for Krishna. So the answer is, you could so to speak practice a shakti or attachment to Krishna, but don't do it with any pretension that I'm in this a shakti stage. I'm in a stage of ecstatic emotion. Think that maybe this is just some abhas, some shadow reflection, some neophyte's appreciation of devotional service. Just because I feel a little enthusiasm for a while in devotional service when things are going all right and there are no obstacles, doesn't mean I'm experiencing a shakti or ruchi and so on. Just be grateful that you're getting a little drop of mercy, whatever it may be. And it's not wrong to assume, as we read in Lord Chaitanya's verse, that actually I don't have love of God. Or, as he says, how could I live if I had love of God? How could I live in separation from Krishna? I would die. Pure love of God doesn't exist in this world. He gives an example, like on the higher planets, they have these rivers of gold or rivers of mango juice and everything. You don't find those rivers here in the material world. So similarly, in this world, you can't find pure love of God. It doesn't exist. That example is given because not being with Krishna, you would not be able to go on eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. How can you claim you love Krishna when you're doing all these other things at the same time? So accept that you're a lowly creature, but by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, you're engaged in this auspicious way. It's a childish kind of thing that at the first sign of call it advancement, we already think that we're a great scholar. Like a schoolboy immediately thinks he's a great scholar. All right. So now, examples of the nine symptoms of steady bhava will be described. If love for Krishna in a seedling stage has fructified in one's heart, one is not agitated by material things. This is the first stage, and is called kshanti, K-S-A-N-T-I, which is translated variously in the synonyms or in the verses as forgiving or perseverant or patient or undisturbed. And as an example, he quotes from Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Parikshit, O Brahmanas, just accept me as a completely surrendered soul, and let Mother Ganges, the representative of the Lord, also accept me in that way. For I have already taken the lotus feet of the Lord into my heart. Let the snake bird or whatever magical thing the Brahmana created bite me at once. I only desire that you all continue singing the deeds of Lord Vishnu. Purport. This is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 119.15, spoken by Maharaj Parikshit while he was sitting on the bank of the Ganges, expecting to be bitten by a snake bird summoned by the curse of a Brahmin boy named Sringi, who was the son of a great sage named Shamika. News of the curse was conveyed to the king, who prepared for his imminent death. Many great saintly persons, sages, brahmanas, kings, and demigods came to see him in his last days. Maharaj Prikshit, however, was not at all afraid of being bitten by the snake bird. Indeed, he requested all the great personalities assembled to continue chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu. So he could have counter-cursed, but he was very patient and just accepted it upon him. He was forgiving towards the boy. He was humble, because he had committed a mistake too. He had put a snake around Samigrishi. So he thought, I deserve to be cursed. So he was very subdued and patient in this thunderbolt that had happened to him, that you would have to die in 7 days. He didn't get upset by it. Took it as providential. But I've always liked this verse, and the first time I heard it, even as poetry, and as I think so many times I've spoken at Sunday feasts, and I've always liked to describe this setting, which is the setting of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, that the king was informed of his death. He went to the bank of the Ganges, and Shukadeva Goswami came there, and this is how the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. It's a wonderful story of how the Bhagavatam was, and it right away brings out the quality of forbearance, and it brings out the fact of death coming to each of us and what we should do at the time of death, which is now. As he later asked, what should a person do, especially a person at the time of death? So it's a wonderful setting. And there's some other features about it too. One is that Maharaj Prikshit asserts himself as surrendered. He says, accept me as a surrendered soul. So although he's humble, he's asserting that I am actually surrendered. I'm ready for whatever will happen. And Prabhupada writes in the purport in Srimad Bhagavatam, he was confident of going back to Godhead. It's not just that he was ready in a manly way to die, but he was confident and fearless because he expected that he would see Krishna and go back to Godhead. But as this verse is wonderful, the verse after it is also wonderful, because just in case he didn't go back to Godhead, he says this: again, offering obeisances unto all you brahmanas, I pray that if I should again take my birth in the material world, I will have complete attachment to the unlimited Lord Krishna, association with his devotees, and friendly relations with all living beings. Prabhupada calls this the perfect pattern for a human being. So again, these three elements of what a person should want, I think it's very relevant for us, because we may not be so confident that after this one human life of practicing devotional service, most of us, even within this life, we weren't practicing devotional service in the beginning of it. So does it mean by one human life we'll be able to go back to Godhead, or will we be perfected? If not, what should we want to have in the next life? So we should like a life in which we are attached to Krishna completely, we associate with his devotees, and we are friendly with all living beings. Next verse: not a moment should be lost. Every moment should be utilized for Krishna or connected with him. So this is another of those qualities of Bhava. It's called the avyartha kalatvam purport. Maharaj Parikshit's expression of anxiety is explained in this verse. He says, let whatever is destined to happen take place. It doesn't matter. Just let me see that not a moment of my time is wasted without a relationship with Krishna. One has to tolerate all obstacles on the path of Krishna consciousness, and one has to see that not a moment of his life is wasted outside of Krishna's service. So the same person, Maharaj Parikshit, is given for this second quality, that he didn't waste his time. He right away, he turned the kingdom over to his son, and he went to the Ganges, and he didn't eat, he didn't sleep. He just heard about Krishna in his last days. Prabhupada says, we're not so fortunate to get a notice like that, but we shouldn't think, well, I can waste my time. I may get some notice at the end, and then maybe I'll go to Vrindavan. But we don't know, and we should use our time very profitably. We need to make so much advancement, and suddenly we'll get notice that this valuable human life that you've been given is now used up, and what have you done with it? What profit have you made with it? Next verse is an example from the Hari Bhakti Sudaya of this quality, not to lose time. It tells, in the positive sense, what devotees do with their time. With their words, they offer prayers to the Lord. With their minds, they always remember the Lord. With their bodies, they offer obeisances to the Lord. Despite all these activities, they're still not satisfied. This is the nature of pure devotees. Shedding tears from their eyes, they dedicate their whole lives to the Lord's service. I think of that topic again of practice and spontaneous service. By living in the temple, by engaging in deity worship, you'll do all these things. You'll offer prayers, you'll bow down. I don't know about shedding tears, but you'll do these activities of using your time well. The schedule is arranged that you're always engaged in Krishna's service and not wasting time. So that's the beauty of following a schedule. And I remember when we in the beginning in ISKCON, even when we had temples, we didn't follow schedules with any rigidity. And then we started introducing it around 1970, and we're very happy with them. And I wrote a letter to Prabhupada from Boston, how by following the schedule, it was good. And he said, yes, if by following the schedule, there'll be no room for Maya to get in. And you have this image that if you leave a little space, Maya is like, I don't know, like a thief or a mouse or something. If you leave a little space, it'll enter. So you have to not leave any space. They think of your time like that. And if your whole time is dedicated to Krishna, then how can Maya enter? But if you leave a little time, idle time is the devil's workshop, then you can, leave a little time, a lot of time for Krishna, but a little time for Maya. Maya will gnaw away at your good consciousness. Moving on, in the material field, people are interested in material enjoyment, mystic power, and sense gratification. However, these things do not appeal to the devotee at all. Now he's describing another quality, how the devotee is not interested in material things, so he's detached. It's the quality of being detached. It's called virakti. And here's an example from Srimad Bhagavatam. King Bharata was very eager to attain the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, who is called Uttama Shloka, because poems and prayers are offered to him for his favor. In his youth, King Bharata gave up his attractive wife and children, as well as his beloved friends and opulent kingdom, just as one gives up stool after passing it. Purport. These are signs of virakti, detachment, found in a person who has developed bhava, the preliminary stage of love of Godhead. This verse is quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam. Detachment. I was just reading in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. It was describing the brother of Lord Chaitanya, Vishvambar. And it said, the book said, as soon as he was born, even in his childhood, he showed a detachment. He was very detached from life, which indicated what was going to happen, that he would take sannyas. And so while other people would be interested in different things, education or socializing and everything, it could be seen even in a child that he just had no interest in these things. So this is the quality of detachment. Of course, it can be just a negative thing where we want attachment to Krishna along with detachment to matter. So King Bharata is given as the example. But there are many others. In Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada names the King Bhagiratha. And not that this existed only long ago. He mentions someone within 200 years named Lal Babu, who was a very wealthy landlord in Calcutta. He became a Vaishnava and went to Vrindavan. And then, as part of his renunciation, he had no income. He would beg from door to door. And Prabhupada talks about begging and says how when you beg, you get insulted sometimes. He would beg even at the homes of his former enemies. But he did not, actually this has to do with another quality, but it's mentioned here too. He was prideless. He was detached. So the next one is prideless. Although a pure devotee's standard is above all, he still considers himself to be in the lowest stage of life. Bharata Maharaj always carried affection for Krishna in his heart. Although Bharata Maharaj was the crown jewel of kings, he was still wandering about and begging alms in the city of his enemies. He was even offering respects to Chandala's low-class men who eat dogs. Don't be proud of things that you have because they came from Krishna and they'll be taken away at death. So we can be proud of Prabhupada as our spiritual teacher and just think how he's such a wonderful teacher compared to other teachers and how Krishna is so attractive compared to any other male, and Radharani is so attractive. But it's not our pride, and we're just, whatever little devotional service we have, we can be, in that sense, proud of that. May not be much, but I'm very happy to, proud, you can say a humble pride, and but not proud about things that will be taken away. So he's very humble, and willing to be even treated by others as that they don't respect him, that doesn't disturb him. He's not very a proud person is really working hard to get respected by others. He doesn't bother about that. When that's mentioned in the verse Trinada Pisani Chaino, you should offer respect to others and don't expect respect for yourself. The result of this will be, it's a very good state for always chanting Hare Krishna. And if you're not worried, will people respect me or why don't they respect me? If you're tolerant like a tree and just take insults, it leaves you free to just go on chanting despite the things that are going on in the world. Whatever it is, it'll go on, but I just want to chant Hare Krishna. That's the kind of a secret there in the Chanadapi verse. A fully surrendered devotee always hopes that Lord Krishna will be kind to him. This hope is very firm in him. Oh, this is a nice verse because it indicates a feeling of Krishna is actually there, he exists, and I have a relationship with him. That one last week, was it Bhakta Octavia, was asking, how can I be a friend of Krishna? And just like we're friends with each other. So we should, but as I was admitting, yes, Krishna seems very distant to me also, but we can have a hope that he's a person, and I was recommending to develop a relationship with the deity of Krishna, and Krishna is a person. He's given us his name form also, and he has pure devotees who are friends of his, so I should have some hope, an advanced devotee does, that Krishna will be kind to me, and I can increase my relationship with him. It's not that Krishna does not exist or Krishna has no care for me. An example is given by this, for this. Oh my Lord, I do not have any love for you, nor am I qualified for discharging devotional service by chanting and hearing, nor do I possess the mystic power of a Vaishnava, knowledge or pious activities, nor do I belong to a very high caste family. On the whole, I do not possess anything. Still, O beloved of the gopis, because you bestow your mercy on the most fallen, I have an unbreakable hope that is constantly in my heart. That hope is always giving me pain. One time a godbrother and I were discussing, and he brought up this verse. Actually, I was giving the class, so he asked the question. As if I was supposed to be the one to give the answer, but it was a difficult question. He said, in this verse that's in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he starts out, Rupa Goswami is praying that he has all these disqualifications and doesn't love Krishna, but then he says he has a hope of attaining Krishna, and then this last line is puzzling. That hope is always giving me pain. Why is the hope giving him pain? So, I'm not sure exactly what Rupa Goswami had in mind, but I've thought of two reasons, or two explanations of the pain. One, it's the actual separation from Krishna. We know that this causes a transcendental pain, not like material pain. But it's the pain that the gopis feel and the other residents of Vrindavan. So it's a sign of the strong hope. He says he has hope, and he says the hope is causing him pain. It's the pain of separation from Krishna. Therefore, it's a sign of his good fortune. Another reason for the pain, it's the list of the disqualifications. They cause him pain. That he has all these bad qualities that keep him from the goal. That could be. Anybody else knowing that verse, thought about it, can understand why that pain is there? Chaitanya, you usually have some.
I think it's in a sense of hope against hope.
To have both, to have hope and also to be hopeless.
And to be hopeless at the same time.
Yeah, it's not an easy position to be in. Okay, and that's the hope quality. And then moving on, this eagerness is chiefly characterized by an ardent desire to associate with the Lord. So having the hope, it generates a strong desire to be with Krishna, and that's called samutkanta, or eagerness. Again, you can to some degree practice enthusiasm, but these are also gifts of the Lord. They come from Him. It's called sometimes a shudashatva. It descends from Krishna. It's not an ascending process. It's good to generate enthusiasm, but that can only go so far. So when you reach the spontaneous stage, Krishna blesses you with the samutkanta. Next verse, it quotes from the Krishna Karnamrita by Bilba Mangala Thakur. O Krishna, O flute player, the sweetness of your early age is wonderful within these three worlds. You know my unsteadiness and I know yours. No one else knows about this. I want to see your beautiful, attractive face somewhere in a solitary place. But how can this be accomplished? That's a very esoteric verse. That's in the mood of a gopi like Radharani, addressing herself to Krishna. And she's so eager to be with Krishna. How can this be accomplished? I want to see your beautiful face. So that's the example for great eagerness. If you don't have eagerness to see Krishna, to serve Krishna, then how can you be a real devotee? Next, Namagana Sada Ruchi Laya Krishna Nama. Due to having great relish for the holy name, one is inclined to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra constantly. So this devotee who has real steady bhava, he keeps going. She keeps going after 16 rounds. Says, chants the Maha Mantra. Sada, ruchi. Sada means always, has a taste for chanting. Not just the bare minimum. So we practice Hare Krishna, very, very much practice oriented, and at the same time we can beg for this taste. Now why should we want the taste? We don't want spiritual sense gratification, but we want to please Krishna by offenseless chanting, by chanting in love. So we can, again, in discussing the relationship of practice and attainment, we could practice here without having the taste. We could practice by begging for the taste. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, I am begging for the taste of the holy name. So that can be the practice of the dry chanter. Please, Krishna, allow me to have the taste of chanting your holy name, so that I can pay attention and get out of this offensive stage. I have heard that an advanced devotee chants with constant taste, and I have so little taste. And here's the example. O Govinda, this youthful girl named Radhika is today constantly pouring forth tears like nectar falling from flowers. She's also singing your holy name in a sweet voice. Chanting Hare Krishna, chanting Krishna's names, is not something that just neophytes do, and then when you go to the spiritual world, you only engage in pastimes and you don't chant. Chanting is a liberated activity also. Or else, why would Radhika be chanting Krishna's name? Just by hearing his name, she becomes ecstatic. There's a verse in one of Rupa Goswami's plays, and Prabhupada quotes it, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Radharani says, I think I must be condemned because I'm attracted to three different men. I'm so unchaste. There's this one man I see in this picture, because Vishakha drew a picture of Krishna. He says, I'm very attracted to him. There's this other person who plays the flute. I'm very attracted to him. And I'm also attracted to this person whose name I've heard you say, Krishna. So I'm attracted to all three. And then her friend says, this is actually one person. But the chanting is also mentioned there by Radharani. More qualities. At this stage of bhava, a devotee has awakened the tendency to chant and describe the transcendental qualities of the Lord. He has attachment for this process. So this is a shakti attachment for talking about Krishna. If we get a chance to preach, either in the forum of a classroom or just one person who comes to the temple, or any person who becomes a little receptive, and we like to do that, that's a beginning symptom, that attachment to... Prabhupada had that so powerfully. He was always talking about Krishna. He couldn't stop. He never talked about anything mundane. So the desire to glorify Krishna, to convince people about Krishna, is a sign of... a great Krishna devotee. And of course it can be done in many ways. You don't have to be a lecturer, but somehow to do it, you can do it by distributing a book and let Prabhupada do the preaching, or some way to let Krishna's glories be known, this is a symptom of a devotee. Even the desire, if you don't do anything, but you just desire, wouldn't it be wonderful if people knew about Krishna, if people could appreciate Krishna? That desire is also very good. And why do you feel that? Because you think that Krishna is so wonderful. So the example of the tendency to chant and describe the transcendental qualities of the Lord is given. And it's interesting. It's not the example is not a proactive description of preaching, but it describes the inner quality of a person who is just so attracted to Krishna. It may be that the chanting is done even with nobody else hearing it. Like Bhakti Sananda Saraswati said, you just chant to the four walls. You're just so attracted, or just go around like a madman singing because you're so much attracted to Krishna. So here's the verse that's given as evidence of a devotee's being awakened to wanting to describe Krishna's qualities. Madhuram madhuram vaparasya vibhor madhuram madhuram vadaram madhuram madhugandhi mridu smitametarahu madhuram 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 madhuram. O my Lord, the transcendental body of Krishna is very sweet, and his face is even sweeter than his body. The soft smile on his face, which is like the fragrance of honey, is sweeter still. This is a verse quoted from Bilva Mangala Thakur's Krishna Kanamita. Now we've just got two more of these qualities. Krishna Lila Stani Kare Sarvada Vasati. Oh, actually, one more. This is the last one. A devotee absorbed in ecstatic emotion for Krishna always resides in a place where Krishna's pastimes were performed. Verse, O Lord Pundarikaksha, while chanting your holy name with tears in my eyes, when shall I dance in ecstasy on the bank of the Yamuna? So it's not enough to just hear about Krishna and chant about Krishna, but one wants to live in the place where Krishna performed his pastimes in this world, that's in Vrindavan or in Navadvip as Lord Chaitanya. And there are many verses written by the Goswamis advising this. the potency of one should live in Vrindavan, or physically you're not able to, then mentally you should live there. So there's no further verses. Then he says, these are the symptoms of a person who has developed attraction, bhava, for Krishna. Now let me describe the symptoms of a person who is actually elevated to love of Krishna, prema. O Sanatan, please hear this from me. Well, this is a good place to stop. So, any questions or comments?
You were discussing pride, pridelessness. It seems that on one hand, one can try and make attempts to be prideless and seemingly very easily do such a thing, but find out that it's a very shallow attempt, and that the reality of the situation is that maybe pride bubbles up and it's there.
It's very tricky, because then you become proud of your humility. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So you were mentioning a couple different things there regarding being proud of what Srila Prabhupada has brought to us, and these different ways to use it. I've actually read in a purport where Srila Prabhupada mentioned that one can carry their head high with pride in devotional service, as a horse would carry their head high pulling the cart. But again, yet there seems to be a real fine line and a real danger there. So how can one engage that tendency, which might be there somehow or another?
Well, if we think completely negatively of a person who didn't have any pride, sometimes this is brought up with psychological approach, how their person has very low self-esteem, and how this is like, it can even be a sickness, you know. You have, like you said, hold your head pride, hold your head high. A person might be a devotee, but be actually ashamed of Krishna somehow, and not think that Krishna was so great, or not be so confident of Prabhupada as a representative of Krishna. Maybe people won't accept Krishna. He has so many wives and everything. And maybe there's some fault in it. And so that lack of confidence in the spiritual process that you're following would be like a lack of pride in a way that we wouldn't want to have. Those would be some undesirable examples of lack of pride, or prideless. You should be proud. You think on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, how the soldiers were on the side of Krishna, and they had the flag of Hanuman, and they were proud to be with Krishna, not on the other side. So we're in the Lord Chaitanya's group, where we should be proud of this group. And it's not in an arrogant way, but it's a superiority overall. There is a fine line. If you just think that you personally are a great person, a great devotee, I think when as soon as fault finding enters, you know, then it's no good. The work that I'm doing is better than the work of other devotees. That's a bad pride, a false pride. As soon as you see another devotee's pride, you get jealous, or you don't wish them well, then that's a pride on your part. Why am I thinking ill of the others? Well, because what I'm doing is better. No, you should be charitable and feel that everyone's doing something good. And not just devotees, but in ISKCON, but any person who's trying to do something. I should, like we read, Maharaj Parikshit wished to have good feelings for all living beings. So don't be so proud that, well, I am a devotee of ISKCON, so I'm better than everybody else. But be humble that Krishna consciousness may be the best, but within this movement, I'm not a very advanced devotee at all. I'm a very low devotee, just as trying to be a devotee. You have to tread the fine line and not be puffed up in the wrong way, but not be proud in a good sense, the way Hanuman is proud of Rama. Okay.
Trying to find an analogy, you know, about chanting Krishna's name, and this might sound sentimental, but sometimes when I played with my child, his name is Narada, and I just feel like he's a great child, so sometimes I dance with him and I chant his name. I just dance with him and he dances also, and I feel like I know him and I like him, and he's a great kid, so I chant.
And I see the analogy. Like, you know your child real well, and there's a nice reciprocation. Why can't you have that with Krishna?
Yeah, I mean, even of any person you know, and you think they're nice, you feel like you want to chant their name.
Hmm. Well, why don't you do the same with Krishna? Chant his name and dance with him like you dance with your son.
It's just a feel that I'm in sometimes distant. Well, although I've heard a lot about him. I keep asking the same question.
Well, say there's somebody distant, but if you want to know them, then you have to spend some time with them. But say he was if you want to know somebody, you should spend time with them. So if you want to know Krishna who seems distant, spend time with him. And then you may say, but he won't let me. That's like saying spend time with the president of the country. He won't let me spend time with him. He's so distant. But Krishna, that's not true in Krishna's case. He will let you spend time with him. He's saying, I'll spend as much time with you as you want. And in this form of the name. And then you're saying, oh, I don't like to spend time with you in the form of the name. But why not? It's a very good form. And he'll spend time with you in any way you want. You can play with him as a friend or as a lover, but you have to qualify first. You have to qualify to get your son. You had to become a husband and have a relationship with your wife, and then your son was born and you're supporting your son. So you've earned a right to be with your son. So you have to qualify to be with Krishna face to face. And he is very great, but he's given you opportunities right away to do it if you want. So it's just to say he's far away is not fair to Krishna. He does want to close the gap. He's coming forward with some very good ways that you can be with him. Your openness is very good. You're like speaking. It's not just like what you're saying is true for you only. We're all like that. That we find it easy to develop relationships with family and friends, and we kind of keep Krishna distant. Somebody wrote to me that she said, "I'm afraid of opening up to Krishna. I'm afraid he'll smash my anartas." So there are different reasons why people want to keep Krishna distant. Maybe we're kind of hiding that to ourselves. We're saying, oh, Krishna is so distant, but within we're thinking, I don't want to get close to him. He's too powerful. He'll take away the things that I want. And we should try to examine why we don't want to get closer to Krishna. I was giving that class on reading, why we should read Prabhupada's books, and Uddhava, you were saying that you don't like to read, not that you don't like, but you sometimes don't because it's the demands are too heavy. You were going to say?
No, I like that you're talking about examining things, and because those principles of Prabhupada, when you're ecstatic, because you can explain like that, lots of times you explain those, not another song, because we kind of keep Krishna consciousness is esoteric because it suits us in many ways. You know, we're actually, it is very well explained, and like you're explaining this in this class, that now it's become more clear that what Baba is to me, it's not some, oh, Baba is when you're running around, you know, got something that I can't understand, actually some symptom, but actually those are someone who doesn't waste time, someone who's not proud, someone, you know.
Well,
it's humbling, of course, but it's enthusiasm as well. You think that, well, yeah, now I know who's got Baba, they're manifesting, and now I can attain it as well. It's not just somebody have to stop wasting so much time, or stop, you know, not be so proud and so on. So it's like you can actually practice Baba. That's the point, I think. You can actually practice it.
Yeah, I think it's inspiring to hear them and aspire for them, that this is what this is the goal. That's what the chapter is called, Life's Ultimate Goal. So if somebody said, well, what is this Krishna consciousness? What are you trying to get? You know, what's the goal? Well, this is at least one of the advanced stages, that you're living like this in relationship to God, and you develop these qualities. So your sentiment, it's not sentimental, your sentiment is very nice, that you want Krishna to be your friend and you feel he's not your friend the way your son is, but he can be. He can be. So don't give up. Just don't be frustrated and conclude that he can't be your friend, but try to become his friend by chanting his name, offering him food. There are six symptoms of loving friendship. You offer Krishna food, take food from him, and offer Krishna your mind and hear what he has to say, and gifts, give Krishna some gifts and accept gifts from Krishna. Start practicing these things and with a little faith, and you'll see that Krishna is your friend. Try to understand from the Vaishnavas how Krishna is acting in your life now, and he is your friend. And the ladies? What?
Thank you very much.
Okay. You can ask me again next week, we'll discuss it. It's good enough to talk about every week. Who has? Yes?
Hmm.
Is that in the temple, the offering that's made to Radha Govinda, or at home? So the temple offering is distributed at certain times only, and first of all, as we all know, we can't take anything before it's offered to Krishna. That would be a great transgression. But once it's offered to Krishna, the rule of not taking it is certainly not the same. In other words, it's not a great offense to take it any time after it's offered, but it's a great offense to take it before it's offered. Like Madhavendra Puri, he was thinking he would like to taste the prasadam while it was still being offered, and so that he thought that was an offense in his mind. What I'm saying is, it's not a great offense to want to take it right away after it's offered. It's not a great offense. It may be breaking of the schedule, but we should further inquire: why do you want to take it right away? If you examine yourself, like what you said, is really sweet. That you're thinking you should get the mercy right away, or else you may die. Are you understanding what I'm saying? But if the reason would be that I'm sense gratification, that's a very nice cake, that's a very nice subject, I want to eat it right away, then you should restrain yourself and wait until the prasadam is distributed. I just read a story in this magazine, Krishna Katamrita, was put out by the followers of Gaur Govinda Maharaj, about the deity Alarnath, that in Jagannath Puri. I can tell a brief. I think it's relevant. And there was a Brahmin who was worshipping that deity, and he had to go away. So he told his little son that you offer the deity prasadam while I'm gone. But the son said, I can't do it. I'm so young, I don't know all the mantras. He said, that's all right. Just say the prayer to God, please take it. And just do it in that simple way. He will take it. So then the father Brahmin went away. And the boy, he made the offering. He said, please, Lord, I don't know the proper mantras or the procedure how to do this, but please accept the prasadam. And he did that, and then he went out and played with his friends. And then he came back, and he thought, being so uneducated, he thought that the deity is supposed to eat the food and it should be gone. So he saw that it wasn't gone. He said, Krishna, you didn't eat the food. Now when my father comes back, he'll be so upset. Please eat the food. So then he went out and played some more, and he came back again, and the food was still there. And so he got very upset, and he was crying, Krishna, please, please. And he went away, and they came back again, and the food was gone. So he was happy, and he thought the right thing happened. When his father came home, his father was convinced that the boy had taken the food himself. And he was chastising him, he was going to beat him. He said, or he thought he'd given it to the dogs or something. He said, no, no, father, I didn't do it. And I gave it to Krishna, and Krishna took it. So he said, you do it again, and I'll see if Krishna takes it. So the boy offered again, and he played, please, Krishna, take the food. My father doesn't believe. So Krishna, again, he started to take the food, and the Brahmin was hiding. And the Brahmin came out. He said, don't. He said to Krishna, you can't take this. You're a deity. the deity can't take the food. And when he stopped Krishna, it was hot sweet rice. The sweet rice went up, and it burnt Krishna. And they said that deity still has a mark there. And then Krishna said, you are so faithless. You're supposed to be a Brahmin, but you're just a materialist. He said, your family is going to be cursed, everyone in this family except this boy. Anyway, I tell this story because it shows a kind of naive faith in the in how Krishna does accept the food. But my basic answer to the question would be that if you're living in the temple, you shouldn't act in a way that will disturb the temple activities. But I don't see anything deeply wrong with your desire to take the prasadam right away. provided it's for a spiritual reason. There's that story of that Prabhupada was eating, and he put a sweet ball from his plate on Tamal Krishna's plate in front of him, and Tamal Krishna kept it there, but another devotee went and took it and stole it and ate it right away, and Tamal Krishna was angry, but Prabhupada approved. The other boy had taken it right away. So you're so eager, that's all right. But be eager for the mercy, not just for the food. Yeah, you had a question, yeah.
As you grow older, it seems that eating standards are diminishing. And it seems it's not so important because we are maybe chanting, preaching, and so. So then, it's really important to follow the standards.
Eating desire is diminishing? Eating desires to...
No, eating standards. We eat anything. Eating standards.
As we grow older.
Also, there are children also who are also eating any kind of thing. So it's now... is it important now or is it not anymore important? Because it used to be important before the world is rather strict, but they are eating.
No, if by standard, if you mean that we should only eat what's offered to Krishna, that should be kept. That standard should be kept. In Prabhupada's books, it says you shouldn't eat grains cooked by non-devotees. Standards like that are important. As we grow older, they shouldn't be abandoned. Am I answering your question?
Yeah, also sometimes devotees consume something. They say, sometimes I ask devotees, did you offer it? He said, no, it's not offerable.
Yeah, so why should the standards be slackened just because we're growing, quote, older? What does that mean, older? Less... less Krishna conscious. If growing older means less Krishna conscious, let's not grow older. We should keep the standards that we kept, like you say, when we first came to Krishna consciousness, we thought these are the standards, let's keep them. So we should continue to keep them. Okay, I used up my time. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.